Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hello and welcome to another edition of Insane in the Membrane.
Insane in the Membrane.
Hello everybody, it's that time again. I love this podcast. I love Insane in the Membrane and I love Insane in the Fembrane. I'm so pleased that these podcasts are being so well received by you lovely people. Thank you. Thank you so much for just being there and all the lovely messages and the liking and the subscribing that you do. Thank you to our lovely Patreons. Really appreciate that. You are really helping us keep this podcast on the right path, because, you know, as you know, it's been a tough old time with losing every stitch of work that I ever had. It got gone. 20 minutes, it was gone. Oh, wow. So thank you to you. You've kept this podcast going. Really appreciate that. Big thanks to Lindsay Chook. We've also got Nat Dodman. We've got Mia Rainey. Thank you to you guys. Mags a Doodle. Thank you for all that you do. You're all lovely people. All of that. There's many more shout-outs to come. Don't worry about that. And we'll get to that. There's so many names. And I just want to say thank you to everybody that voted for us for the podcast awards. Unfortunately, we didn't make the run-in, but, you know, there'll be other times, there'll be other awards, we'll get there. But thank you for all of you for taking the time to do it. Hang on, what was that?
You've already got awards.
I'm getting heckled now by Jade again. Yeah, I've got awards, but it'd be nice to have some more, wouldn't it? Yeah, it's always nice to have awards, isn't it? I never won anything when I was a kid. I didn't even score a goal at football. I was terrible. Anyway, so this is taking a turn, this introduction. So thank you to all of you for doing that. Anyone listening, if you'd like to be a patron, please you go on to, if you put Insane in the Membrane into the Patreon site, it'll come up and it'll show you. There's also a link in my Twitter bio. It will take you there as well. So yeah, I am Rich Wilson on Twitter. I am Rich Wilson on Instagram. Rich Wilson on Facebook. If you link me up on there, and then you can see where you can. If you would like to, you can help us. That's very kind of you. Thank you very much. This week, I'm joined by someone. This is the thing about this podcast. People, because I get sometimes people say, "Oh, we need names to get people sort of interested, right?" But I want to keep it. I want interesting people on as well. And my guest this week is a family member. His name's John Jennings, and he's been in my family. I think we said 20 years he's been in the family. We explain how and why, what came to be. But he's such a lovely man. We talk about all this in the episode. He's a lovely dude. And I wanted him to come on and tell his story so that other people that maybe have been in a similar situation can see that it doesn't necessarily have to be. It doesn't always end up shit. Basically, this is a success story that I wanted other people to hear. So, John Jennings, family member, he's on the podcast. Here he is.
I've got some water. I've got some snacks. I'm going to be all good.
Ready to go. Good to go.
Tuckered in for the long run.
Well, now, do you know what is when I try and describe to people who you are in relation to me, it's always, as you know, it's always a confusing one, isn't it? It's like because for the people that listen at home. So this is John. I've known John, blimey, years now, isn't it, John? How many years?
Since I was six. So 20 years six, now.
20 years, right?
20 years.
So you were in a care home, yep. That my now sort of ex-mother-in-law used to work in with with the mother of my children. So it's Lisa and Jackie. And then Jackie fostered you.
Yeah.
That's right, isn't it? Yeah.
I think I was asking her for about the 2 years that I was in the care home. Yeah. I was asking her, why don't you just take me home? And I think she must have got so bored of it that she just thought, sorry, I was like, fuck it, let's do it.
Imagine that, just bored. Go, yeah, all right, stop going on. It's like a kid asking to go to McDonald's. All right, stop going on. Yeah. Just get
in
the car.
This is just notch level. up. Don't want McDonald's, I want you to take me home.
Or you take me home because it's shit.
And get me McDonald's on the way.
Yeah. So let's start from there then. Let's start, because I know bits. I don't know it all. Mm. And we could get it doesn't have to be personal. We as personal as you want to get. It's completely up to you. I just think it'd be really interesting for people listening who might have come from a similar background, might have, you know, ended up in care. And then, because you hear so many stories, people, you know, especially if someone's ended up in prison or they've ended up getting whatever, something bad's happened to them, and they go, well, he was in care, and so there was no hope for him. Whereas yours is I don't want to, you know, spoiler alert for anyone listening, it's a happy ending. Yeah. And that's why I was really interested in having you on, because I just think it's a nice, considering where you came from, it's a nice positive spin on what not on the usual narrative. So let's talk. How did you end up where were you born, John? I don't even know that. Where were you born?
Birmingham. You do know where I was born, because when I was younger, you used to take the piss on my accent. So,
but you no. You did. You didn't sound. That was it. Because you didn't sound like you were from Birmingham. You'd say we used to take the mickey out of you the way you say wrestle.
Yeah.
Which I know. Looking
well, growing
back
up
now,
in a foster care.
Yeah,
it was a bit bullying. But growing up in foster care, I was kind of put in foster care homes from, I think I was a year and a half. So
really?
the first few years of my life, bouncing from home, backwards, forwards, and it being in Birmingham, didn't really give me the best introduction to speech. So I couldn't talk very well. And that's why he used to take the piss out of me for certain words.
I know. And now looking back, I'm like, oh God, I was such a prick.
It helped me speak better though. I'd have speech therapy and stuff, so that's why I don't have any kind of semblance of a Brummy accent anymore.
Yeah, right, okay. You've had speech therapy, have you?
Yeah, I think when I first moved to Kent from Birmingham, they got me in some speech therapy classes because my reading and writing and just speech in general wasn't very good, so that kind of whipped the Brummy out of me.
And no disrespect to anyone from Birmingham listening. I've got a lot of love for Birmingham. Just putting it out there. So, especially since they improved the ball ring. Can you remember? What's your sort of earliest memory? You know, if this started when you were sort of one and a half. So can you remember?
It's such a blur because you bounced from. I can't remember how many homes I bounced in between before I moved to Kent to be in the home that my mum, Jackie, got me in. Mm. But there's not really many memories of that at all because it was just a bit all over the place. But then when I first moved into the care home, that's when I really started to form memories. And I've got quite a few of the just kind of messing around, just being kids in the foster home. But I think it's very difficult to ask a lot of people because they don't really remember when was my first memory. And I think it's all really based around your environment and what you're doing at that time, because there must be something that just clicks and you're like, that's why I remember. So yeah, I remember asking mum to take me from the children's home a lot.
Because it was so traumatic where you were coming from. I suppose your earliest memory would be a good memory, kind of, you know, when things started to kind of improve. Because I sort of know the story of how you came to be in care, and it's fucking horrific, to be honest. And we don't have to go into details about that, but
it wasn't pretty.
No. And do you remember any of that? I suppose you're only one and a half, aren't you? You don't remember any of that sort of shit that was going on?
Not at all. No, I mean, I'm people will say otherwise, but I'm very fortunate. I mean, as you kind of said earlier, I'm one of the success stories of the care system. Mm. I'm very fortunate to be in that position. That is because I was lucky. It's just lucky that Jackie got me when she did.
Yeah.
And I was pulled out of that environment that so many other kids get trapped in. And it's sad. It's really sad. Because there isn't that support of a family and everything else. But the kind of time beforehand where it was all over and what happened, I don't really remember. I have four biological sisters and we're kind of all separated at the moment, but they were all older than me. I was the youngest. Yeah. So for me, I was super lucky because what happened didn't affect me mentally as it would have them, because they're older. They can formulate the memories and they really live through that trauma. Whereas I've kind of got fractured kind of memories or stories of what people told me happened. It didn't really happen to me per se, if you get what I mean, because I was so young, I don't remember any of it.
Well, that's it. You were around, but you weren't aware of what was going on. Do you speak to your sisters at all?
No, not really. But we used to, and I think just as you get older and just life kind of moves away in the distance, it's difficult. And growing up, we had communication, but where they were always in Birmingham, it was difficult to maintain that, and obviously the kind of the trauma that happened made it difficult. So there hasn't been any contact for a long time, but most of them are doing well. You see on Facebook, as you do nowadays.
Yeah.
And they seem to be kind of getting on with life, which makes me happy, because what we all went through was shit, really. But everybody's living their life now.
Yeah. And obviously, like you said, you weren't aware of it, but you've obviously had to sort of relive it, if you like, because people have obviously told you what happened. How have you managed? Have you had to have counselling and things like that to sort of deal with anything? Or have you had any sort of counselling? Because obviously people told you what went on, and it, which was horrific, and so you know, having to kind of deal with that.
I think when I was younger, I used to be able, I can do this now. I used to just talk about it openly because but like there was nothing to be ashamed of there.
No.
I used to get teased for being a foster kid, being called orphan, blah blah blah, as kids do. That's just kids being kids. It wasn't and all that stuff, it frustrates you when you're a child, but as you get older you're like, well, it happened and you've got to make the best of the circumstances you're in. And going back to me being lucky, I was put in a good environment with good support network. I was taken in by a family and everybody welcomed me with open arms. It was a family, and a lot of kids in the foster care system, they'll bounce from homes to homes, and it's not a family. It's just different people every year, every 2.5 years. It spans completely different for every single kid in the system. So, yeah, I think just being pulled out when I was at that age of 6 kind of gave me a new childhood.
Yeah. So that's where you feel like you've started from, and so Jackie and you class them as your family.
Yeah, I call Jackie mom, as you know, and Lisa, the mother of your lovely boys. She's my sister, and as you know, with the boys, we've got a very funny relationship because technically they're uncle, but we call each other brothers.
Yeah, and that's a
weird family tree.
It's a funny one, isn't it?
Very, very weird.
I hadn't really met anybody that had been in care before. It was only through when I was with Lisa and her working in the care assistant, I sort of got to know like yourself and other people. And it was really interesting. And it was really interesting how supported you are. You know, everyone, like you say, it's not family, but did you feel that? Did you feel there is support there? You can, you know, or was it quite sort of people are just doing a job, you know, and not, no disrespect to anyone in the care system. I mean, for you personally, how did it feel? How did it feel just being in somewhere that wasn't your home sort of thing?
Yeah, well, the children's home itself, it was... I have memories of that, and that's, as I said, the memories kind of come from there. But I remember there were staff that were lovely, obviously, Jackie, my now mum. I had a few other workers that I loved, and you could tell they were there because they loved it. Well, they're not there for the money, let's be honest. They're there because they love it, and they want to help these kids. And then there were a few not so nice ones, and you question why they were there. But nothing dodgy ever went on. They just tell you off for no reason, all that usual nonsense. Yeah. But I think the people that work in the care system, I mean, Mom, Lisa, everybody, they're so selfless in what they do, because they're not doing it to get rich. They're doing it because they really want to help people. And you see that with the whole coronavirus now, with them being classed as key workers. They were always key workers. I think they're just, people weren't paying attention to what they were doing.
No, it was just, and it was just a given. Like, people were just, you didn't really think about it. Like, they're nurses, they're carers. I remember being, when I worked in, I used to work in an old people's home. So I, you know, so I was, and, but there were, you know, people that I worked with that didn't give a shit. And that's why I left, because, you know, I was doing a night shift and you're supposed to go and check on everybody like every hour. And you'd be with a staff nurse that was like, she'd push two chairs together and go, right, I'm going to sleep. And I'd be like, well, what about everybody? Like, I'll leave them. And then I'd get bollocked for going up and checking everybody. So it was, that's why I sort of stopped. I got disillusioned with it. But you're right, there are people in there, these people, you know, it costs money to become a nurse, doesn't it? You have to pay to become a nurse. You have to go on courses and things like that. So yeah, you're right, these people are selfless, and it's, you're lucky, man. You're really lucky that you, because again, like I said, I don't want to go into details about what happened, but knowing what I know about what went on in your life, it ended up where you are now. It's incredible, man. It's absolutely incredible.
And Mum will always tell me off whenever I say it, but I always say it. It's thanks to her and the kind of values that she instilled in me. Because I was already aware that I was lucky at that young age, but just being in that environment and making sure that I was good and not falling out of line, because it's so easy to just fall into the bad crowds, especially when you've got that kind of looming over you, or and people can get down, and you understand why. But I always saw, like, what I went through, not something bad, it's something that's good. I mean, I managed to get through all that shit when I was young. I can do this now, and whenever I, like, push myself and want to challenge myself, I've been through a lot worse. And I think when kids are being brought up in care, if they don't have them people to support them and say, listen, you're going to get through this, you'll support this, and it's just going to make you stronger. I think that's what needs to be instilled in them, that this was bad, but it's over now. It's over. And there's not counselling enough for that, because you asked me earlier if I've ever had counselling.
Really?
Never once.
You needed to?
But I never felt I needed to. I don't know if it was because social workers and mum and people at school felt like I didn't need to. It was never offered to me. But again, I don't personally feel like I did need it. I was quite confident in myself, and any problems I had a very close relationship growing up with Jackie Mom, just because she didn't know me my entire life in my mind. So I could tell her anything. So I didn't really need that additional support that other kids do need when they don't have the support at home.
And has it affected you relationship-wise going forward? Do you find, does it affect you? Like, does it, like, sometimes you'll wake up and think about it, or you sort of out the other side and you've gone, well, that was a moment in my life. I'm now here. Does it still loom, as you said earlier?
It does a little bit. And I think growing up, still there's parts where I struggle to kind of express myself. And if I've got a problem, I'll keep it to myself, because that's kind of what I was used to growing up, and I still get that as an adult, and it's something I'm trying to work on. I mean, lockdown, living with three of my very good friends, obviously people get on each other's nerves and stuff, and I went through a lot of stress at work, and I just bottled it all up.
Really?
Bottled it all up, and I do it all the time. And they just said, just don't worry about it, man. Like, it's shit, just let it go. And I was just like, you know what, yeah. And I'm just like, yeah, I do this a lot. And it's so, and it's some of that, you know, you try and work on, you're aware of it. But I think that's something that I've still got from growing up in just the children's home and stuff. Because if you see weakness with the other kids, like, they're not going to kill you or anything, but they will bully you, of course. So you always wanted to just kind of keep yourselves to yourselves.
Yeah. I find, I know this comes up a lot on this podcast, actually. Communication is so important. And I'm the worst at it. Shut up, I'm getting heckled by Jade. I'm always on at people going, communicate. And I even say on here, look, if you're feeling shit, send me a message and I'll get back to you and we'll have a chat. But I'm the worst at reaching out myself. I don't tell anybody anything. Yeah. And that was what really surprised me. This is what, so last week when I came up and saw Bailey, who was with you, my son, and you, and I was, and it was, I didn't realise how much I underestimated you, you lads, because I, in my head, I'm like, oh, they're just out partying, they don't give a fuck, they're doing this because they're young lads, they're doing this and the other. But when we turned up, it's a, one, it's this incredible house on just on the edge of London. It's wonderful. It was shoes off at the door. I was like, shoes off at the door. These young lads are fuck. They've got it going on. And then I'm in there, and then
we don't know where you've been.
And I'm like, what the fuck is this? And then I'm chatting to you lot, and because in my head you're just my sons. You're my family. And suddenly I just felt, oh shit, no, we're equals now. The way we were talking and what we were talking about, and the fact that you lot were telling me, like Bailey turned around and said to me, he goes, well, the thing is with you, Dad, he goes, you just always need someone to look after you. I'm like, how the fuck do you know that? You're 22. So, yeah, I did. I think people do underestimate young people. And I, again, seeing what you've been through and seeing where you are now, you know, you're an incredible chef. You've got this incredible job in the city. You just have this wonderful life, a life that I would aspire to have, and it's incredible. It's incredible. You must look around to someone and go, "Fucking hell, did I right there?"
No, I'm proud of myself and the achievements that I've kind of done. And like nothing big or fancy, but just to get from where I was to where I am now is something that does make me feel very proud. But I'll always push it back to how I was raised and being in that mindset. And I mean, when I was younger in the children's home and stuff, and when I would get down, I always thought, when I'm older, I don't want my kids to ever live like this. And that's always just been a driving force. Whenever I want a good job or something else, I'm just like, you know what, if I eventually do have kids, they're going to have everything that I didn't have growing up. That's only from years 1 to 8. Mm. Obviously, it's got taken in by mum. I had an amazing childhood and stuff. But that first part of life, I want to just have that perfect childhood. And it's very cliche, obviously, and cheesy, but it's cliche for a reason. Everybody wants their kids to have better childhoods than they had themselves, don't they?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, of course they do. It's like with my lads. I try and do the best I can. It's funny, actually. I've spoken to my boys a few times, and I've said to them, look, I wish I'd have been a better dad. I wish I'd have done this. They go, what are you talking about? You were fine. I'm like, I thought I was shit. They go, no, you were fine. You were around. At least you were around. So many dads aren't. But that's the thing you don't realise. This is what I realised about my parents. You know, they're good people, my parents. We didn't want for anything. But, you know, they had their issues and they had stuff going on because they're human beings. And I think people forget that they're parents, but they're not perfect and they don't know everything. You, there's this assumption that all grown-ups know everything, know what's right and what's wrong, and they know fuck all. They're all winging it, just as we are, which has been quite a revelation. And so it's I don't know. I mean, you talk about me taking the piss out of you, which doesn't sound good to the listeners, but I like to think it wasn't all shit.
No, it was no. And when you used to look after me and the boys, you used to have. Can you the shit? But you basically used to come to yours to have fun. We could get over to all things that we couldn't do, watch South Park,
oh God,
play video games late at night.
Yeah,
we can mess around. So, no, it was always fun, always fun. And I think Bailey talks about it, his taste of music coming from you as well. But whenever we was around, we'd be listening to your music, influenced me a lot. So,
oh, nice.
That's very, very fun.
I think that's it because obviously their mum and I had broken up. We spent the 90s getting back together, breaking up, and it was a fucking mess, the 90s. But, yeah, so it's nice to know that you and the lads have nice memories. And what was happening, because you were coming to, like, you'd come with the lads and I'd look after you. And of course, you want to be the best parent. So you go, yeah, this is party central. Yeah. You go to bed at 4 a.m. if you want. You know, yeah. Then I'd let...
go on. Going to up the creek and helping you set up chairs. That was always fun. I don't know how You kept us so entertained just by doing your brilliant.
Yeah, no, that's what it was. Slave labour. It was child labour. Yeah, that was it. Just kidding.
Oh, you can help yourself to a Coke behind the bar and get a packet of crisps. There you go. Yeah. You've got 12 more rows of chairs to set up, though.
And you're happy. You're happy doing it. That's the... Oh.
Well, I'm buzzing. Absolutely buzzing.
But it is funny, isn't it? Like, watching South Park, especially South Park the movie. We talked about this the other day. When, because everyone was going, the two, Key and Bailey was sort of like, oh, we want to watch it, And I'm like, all right then, yeah, you can, all right, I'll let you watch it. I spoke to a couple of mates, they went, well, there's a lot of swearing at the beginning. And I'm like, oh, well, they know swearing. I suppose it'd be all right. And then I put it on, and the opening 10 minutes is shut your fucking face, Uncle Fucker. And I'm like, oh, what have I done?
And you can't
that's
off.
It, because... He's just like, right, I'm in it now, okay. And then they were giddy. The boys were giddy going, oh, this is the best thing we've ever seen. And so we're watching the film, and then I sort of doze off a bit because I had a normal job, actually, in quotes, normal job. So I was knackered. So I'm watching it and dozing off. As I woke up, there's this bit, and it just says, hello, boys, I'm the clitoris. I'm like, no! So I jump up to switch it off. And there's a moment, there's a silence, there's a beat. And I can hear, oh God, here we go. And then I just hear one of them just go, Dad, what's the clitoris? I'm like, ah, oh, fucking hell. So like you said the other day, you're more desensitized to stuff because I let you watch stuff from an early age. I don't know if that's good. It sounds, saying it out loud, it sounds like you went out of the frying pan into the fire. It's just...
just thrown straight into the deep.
Yeah. Oh yeah, you've had a really horrific thing happen to you when you were a kid. Oh, we're going to put you in this knobhead. At least going to show you what clitoris is at 5 years old.
Don't worry, you get a packet of crisps.
Oh yeah. You get to put the chairs out as well.
Yeah. Can't wait.
So how are you? You know, because I know you've had a couple of relationships, but is it? Has what happened to you affected, and that's a cliche sort of question, but has it affected you, like, relationship-wise, like, connecting to people, do you think, or you haven't really thought about it?
No, I think, I'm not really sure. Danny, you'd have to ask my ex, I guess. No. But no, I... Get on. I think that it's going back to the point of not being able to open up. There were times where I could... I've expressed myself more, but I like to think, because I always felt that my mum was so generous for everything that she gave me, I'm quite a generous guy growing up. I've tried to help my mates out, do whatever I can. So I don't know if I'm tooting my own horn a little bit, but there hasn't been that many negative effects for me personally. I don't know, maybe there'll be a trigger in 10 years' time and I go all fucking psycho.
You'll end up a bell tower.
Something will happen. But
you'll end up a church tower screaming shoppers in a fucking yeah. Some shopping centre. God.
Yeah. No. I hope not. But for the most part, I feel what happened was obviously shit, but the lessons and what it's instilled in me going forward has been good. What did happen at the end of my last relationship was where I'd built up stuff for ages. And I was one of them fucking normal guys, don't like crying. But I was brought up always like, you'd hide your emotions and everything else. And I remember when we split up, it was the first time I just proper let go, just let it flood out. And I was just like, it was quite freeing. I was just like, Jesus Christ, this feels good. Feels good just to, you're upset and just cry. It doesn't matter.
This is the thing that baffles me has baffled me for years is that when you're a kid, you know only girls cry, you got to man up, you got to do this, but having a good old cry, and I I'm the worst one at this. I put that shit off. I push that shit down. I'm like, no. Like I say to Jade, I don't want sad music on. Don't she loves melancholy and sadness. You love being sad. It's weird, right?
Sad.
You shouldn't be sad. You're an absolute legend. I'm the worst. I can't have sad music on. But every now and again, a song will come on, and I'll be absolutely blubbing in the car, just blubbing my eyes out. I've been crying a lot of films lately.
I've been like, there's been emotional scenes on TVs and stuff, and I don't start crying, but I'm like, I'm on the custom. I'm like, I probably could if I wanted to just have a
if I pushed
tear,
it a bit,
a
yeah. I think all men should have a cry. All men. It's like happy crying. Like, we watched the film Eurovision last night, right? And I was so happy at the end of it. I had tears running down my head. I'm like, what the fuck is going on?
Oh, happy crying is very, very nice. But people need to, you know, if you're feeling sad, just let it out.
It doesn't matter.
You just feel so much better for it. And I remember, I think I had like a few days of just being proper down in the dumps, just like, then something clicked. I was like, you know what? Fuck this. Get off your ass. Let's do something. And I remember I wanted a new job anyway. I was like, I'm going to call some recruiters. I'm going to get myself sorted. I'm going to take that next step. I'm going to move up to London, bloody, bloody, blah. And with that kind of spur that I spurred myself on with, within 2 weeks, I had a brand new job up in London. Brilliant. I feel like even from something that, on the base of it, was horrible. I mean, we're still friends now, and we both understand why it happened. I mean, it was so good for me in so many different ways. It was just refreshing to firstly just express my emotion, be like, fucking hell, this is shit, whatever. But then to, after that, just to wake up and be like, let's do something, let's sort myself out, let's push myself to the next chapter. So even when people go through shit, the bit after it's what really makes you and what you do with that. If you go through a really challenging part in your life, just afterwards, just pull your socks up and just crack on with it, because you don't know what you can achieve from that. And it could be something major, but if you pull yourself together and you've got the right mindset, you'll do whatever you want.
Yeah, you're right, you know. It's funny, I'm the worst again. Once the clouds descend and I'm just weighed down with, I do get a bit depressed, as soon as you say that, people think there's something wrong with you, but everything just affects me. Yeah. And so I end up it's completely debilitating, and I just end up lying on the bed. I've wasted so much time of my life just staring at the ceiling going, what the fuck, man? What the fuck? Well, and not even knowing why I feel that way. Just feeling that way. But, and like I say, it's easier, like you said, you have to put the effort in afterwards, because when you're feeling shit, it's really difficult to pull your socks up in it, you know.
It's so satisfying though when you go from that zero up, because that, anything you do that, if you are down in the rut, anything that you do that you haven't done during that rut feels amazing. It's like, oh fuck, why haven't I done this sooner? And then that just builds and builds and builds, and as you get your confidence back up and you're just happy again, it just makes you feel so much better. So the initial steps afterwards, it can be small or big, but they feel good.
Yeah, that you're right. It's that we're all guilty of looking at all of our problems together as one thing and going, oh God, there's so much to deal with. Whereas actually what you need to do is just chip away at it, which is what I've been doing. Like if I do just one thing a day, where I like talk to the bank or something like that, that I was avoiding, you know, and then suddenly you go, I feel better now. And then you take the next step. You go, all right, I need to talk to that person. I need to get back in touch with them. And reaching out, like you said, I always think I'm getting in someone's way if I reach out. But then when I do it, people are so pleased to hear from me. I'm like, oh, I should have done this before. I thought I was getting in the way. It's weird, isn't it?
It's frustrating, because you're like, I want to help you so bad. Don't worry. Because I've had friends who have been down before, and they kind of go inside themselves. You talk to them about it. It's, oh, I don't want to annoy you. It's always that same kind of, I don't want to annoy you. And it's just like, you will never annoy me by just wanting to speak to me. I'm here for you whenever you want. Like, you're not taking anything away from me. If I can give you my time to make you feel better, that's all I want to do. Yeah. And anybody that does listen to this and thinks, oh, shit, I don't want to waste people's time. No, you're not wasting anybody's time. Reach out to people. They want to hear from you just as much as you want to speak to them.
Yeah, it's true, isn't it? It is true. It's like, well, and again, with you, like having had such a traumatic start to your life, you kind of, it feels, I don't know, like, it's like, well, he's been through so much. He doesn't want to hear about my bollocks, you know, that. But you've already got a handle on what you've gone through. And so, you know, you're...
Exactly. And it's a good listener. Makes me a good listener, because if you go through some stuff, I'll just listen to you. Don't worry about it. Like, you can get through it.
You always surprise me. Some of the shit you come out with, I'm like, who's the adult here? Is it is it me? I mean, I know you're an adult now, but I mean, you know, I've known you since you were six, and it now
I still look about 12.
Yeah, you do. Don't worry, you'll get a moustache one day. My dad's 74. He's only just grown a decent goatee, so
he's participated in what a lot of gents in lockdown have probably done in trying to grow a moustache, and I don't know if it looks hilarious or bad. I think it's one of the two.
But you look like, no offence, but you look like you're trying to get into a pub underage. Whereas I've joked about this now. I'm at that age now where I can't go to the park on my own because people think I'm a paedophile. I'm now in that older bracket where people are like, oh, what's that old cunt doing? You know, it's that.
Where's his dog?
What's he doing?
If he don't have a dog, he's a weirdo.
That's why you have to walk around with a lead, just in case. People just, even if you haven't got a dog, just carry a lead with you.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
We're looking for a sponsor to help get this brilliant conversation to an even bigger audience. Sponsoring the show, as well as a promotional trailer, means that your message and our message will be inserted into some of Acast's biggest podcast titles. Get on board and partner with Insane in the Membrane. Go to pauldaniels.tv for more information.
Did you go back and revisit what had happened, or did you just kind of leave it?
When I was, how old was I? I was 18, and a lawyer got in touch with me, or a solicitor, got in touch with me and saying, you're eligible for this grant of money that spans back your entire life since you was in care. And it's a support package that they give, I think, each year to kids in care to help them with school and stuff. But I never received it. Just got lost in the system,
really?
I guess. But 18, they said, you've got to claim this now. Otherwise, you're not going to be eligible for it. So I had to kind of dig into my past because of that a little bit. And I remember speaking to mum about it, and she was like, okay, but I'm going to tell you a few things now, just because if they come up through what you need to hear, I'd rather you just hear them from me. So we went through it all, and some of the details of what happened came out that I'd never heard before, because I was a lot younger when... I would say when I probably got to about 12, 13, I didn't really need to talk about it that much anymore.
No.
I was at the age where I understood what happened, and obviously mum doesn't want you reliving that, so she's not just going to bring it up unless she has to. But when it came to finding out the new details, there were bits that frustrated me, obviously. But when you're kind of powerless to what happened, and you can't affect or change anything, I didn't want to let this just kind of sit over me and get me in a rut and just neg me out. I just wanted to, okay, there's nothing I can really do with this information. It's just, I know it now. Let's just move on from it. And that was probably a smart decision on my part, I think.
Yeah.
And even now, if I think back to it, I'm just like, well, it happened. I mean, what happened. Someone went to jail for it, and that's it, really. Mm. I mean, there's not more that can be done. So there's no point letting it weigh me down.
No. I suppose you didn't go and visit your mum. You didn't go and talk to your mum and your real mum.
So this is a sad, funny story. But I was... So with the money that I got because of what happened, I went travelling. So kind of very cliche, go around the world, la-di-da-di-da. But it was just after Christmas and I was sitting on a beach. I was just going through Facebook and I've got some of my biological sisters on Facebook. And I saw one of them post some pictures and I clicked on them and it was like Christmas with mom. And it was, I did some digging and it was the first time I'd ever seen a picture of my biological mom, ever.
Oh, wow.
And I was just sitting on this beach and I was kind of tripping out a little bit. I was like, this is weird. So I looked into it a little bit more and I thought, yeah, but she never reached out to me in my entire life.
Really?
And for me, I've got a mum.
Yeah.
Jackie, who raised me. So in my mindset, I've thought that since I was quite a young lad. When I was old enough to realise that she can contact me if she wants and she never did. When I realised that, I was like, well, she's not my mum. If she doesn't want to put any effort in, why am I going to waste any energy believing that she's my mum? Because she's not.
No.
Because Jackie's my mum. She raised me. Yeah. She taught me my values and everything else. So seeing that obviously brushed everything back. I was like, oh, shit, this is weird. And
yeah, of course, yeah. I mean, it must have been a tsunami of emotions. It must have been incredible. Everything. Oh my God.
I was glad I had a drink in hand and I was sitting on the beach somewhere and not in the office because that would have freaked me out a little bit. I could relax with that news. But even seeing that news, I can if I want to reach out, but I'm not going to. I mean,
no.
She had that chance and she doesn't deserve another chance. And I mean, there might be some people out there that think that's really bad if I've got an opportunity to reach out to someone that I should. But at the end of the day, I was a child growing up from the age of 2 to 18. And that entire time where I was in the care system, she could reach out to me. And even now as an adult, she could if she wanted. She's never wanted to. So why would I?
I know. And anyone listening, if they're going, oh, it's your mum. No, it's more complicated than that. Without going into too much detail, it's fucking horrendous what went on. And you're all right. We're bringing it up now. I mean, you know, how are you talking about it now? Are you got your head around it?
I'm talking about it. Mm. Yeah, no, I mean, you grow up with it. You grow up with the facts and you know what's happened. And there's no point letting it affect you in a negative way because there's nothing I can ever do to change what happened. Therefore, there's no point me letting it change what I do.
No. Well, no, this is it. This is why I wanted to talk to you and have you on. So that other people that have maybe had something really terrible happen to them and end up in care or wherever, or whatever's happened to them, there is hope. You know, having you been in my family for 20 years now, and I've seen you grow to the man you are today. And like I say, you know, you're a dream to be around. You are, again,
you,
like I say, I underestimate you at every turn because I just see you as that 6-year-old boy, whereas you've got your life more together than I have. And that's
I wouldn't find say that.
I don't know. I saw your ass.
I only cooked you dinner the other day as well.
It's brilliant. It was a good dinner. I enjoyed that. You enjoy your cooking. Do you get a lot? Just do enjoy cooking because I know because you're not a chef anymore, but you were, but you still.
No. So dropping out from the hospitality industry was just because I wanted a social life, but I still love to cook. Absolutely loved cook. And as you know, I'll cook at any opportunity. If people come around, I'll follow some cook. I think it's because it's almost like a form of meditation for me because I'm focusing on this one thing, on chopping this vegetable, doing this, and I've got a routine of times and everything that I've got to do. And it's just so nice focusing on that one thing, listening to some music, then afterwards it tastes delicious. So it's kind of a win-win situation in all parts. But no, they're now 9 to 5 city life. It's different, but I enjoy it. It's a good job, and I get to, yeah, I get to cook in my kitchen without being slapped by a chef or screamed or shouted at.
That's the thing, isn't it? About why if so? You don't need to be angry.
Oh, like, my goodness.
Mickey Flanagan used to say, he's like, calm down, Gordon. It's only a bit of dinner. Like, I worked at the Independent in their kitchen at the newspaper. And screaming at you. And you're like, just fuck off. I'm chopping the fucking onions. You shouting at me
We were doing service one day, and I was quite young at this point. I think I was 18. First job in a proper kitchen, fresh out of college. I was chopping some bread, and it was manic, absolute chaos. I just wasn't looking properly and cut with a bread knife right down to my thumb and the nail. Ooh. And it hurt so much. And it was bleeding, obviously, everywhere. And as I did it, I went, ah, fuck. And the chef comes out and said, who the fuck's wearing in my kitchen? And just looks at me. He's like, okay. And I was like, yeah. I'm quite loud anyway. But my God.
I've got translucent.
See-through Casper's in the kitchen. But they put me outside, sit on a fucking box, put your thumb above your head, wrap it in plasters. And it's like, all right, have 10 minutes, see you back in there. And I've got back to work afterwards.
Yeah.
It was absolutely mental.
I mean, I get it. It's busy. You don't have to talk to me like a shitbag.
No.
It was all that. And they don't call you by your name either. Everyone's chef. All right, chef, chef. And you're like, this is bollocks. When you break these things down, it does make me laugh.
It's very much similar to the military in the kitchen, though. The way it's broken down, you have your head chef, and then you've got that kind of line of order of who's the boss and who you speak to and stuff. And one of the chefs I spoke to was just like, he was in the military, and he was like, this is for a very specific reason, but you don't have to shout and scream. You don't have to be absolutely horrendous. I think a lot of the time chefs are just buying off more than they can chew. I mean, everybody who's watched Gordon Ramsay's Kitchen Nightmares know they've got a menu fucking 10 pages long. They're doing too much. And that's when people start to stress out. But what I do think the good thing about the hospitality industry and an idea that eventually when I'm older and have in a position to do it would be, because when you work in restaurants, you're working long hours, long, long hours. And a lot of kids that come out of foster care, if they don't go to uni, they've got nowhere to go a lot of the time. Absolutely nowhere. Yeah. But in a restaurant, you spend so much time with these people, be in the kitchen, front of house. And anybody out there can do it, but for foster kids, I think having an opportunity to get them from school, get them in a restaurant where they can potentially stay and learn skills and pick up, because they're like a family in a restaurant. You spend so much time with them, and you can just be around people constantly. And it's got that, when it's working well, you've got that family kind of environment where everybody's happy, everybody's working together, and it's that sense of community and togetherness that a lot of kids don't get when they leave foster care, because they're literally dumped on the street with some money. If the people that they were staying with just beforehand don't support them, then they usually end up in shelters. And it's a really horrible part of the system that there isn't that much good support for care leavers. So something like a restaurant where you're giving them an opportunity to learn skills and be around people like-minded to them, I think would be really helpful. So
yeah, you don't think about that. Would you think you'd do that then?
I want to do Sumpkin Food eventually when I'm a bit older, just because I still really do enjoy it. But for the time being, I'm happy where I am. But setting up a project like that where you can give back, because as I said at the beginning, I'm very lucky. I'm one of the very few kids in care that gets picked up by a really, really nice family who takes you in. And for the ones that don't get that opportunity, there just needs to be more for them. So if you can give them the chance to, if they don't want to go to uni or they can learn to cook, I mean, I think that would work out quite nicely. So maybe in 10, 15 years.
It's funny, isn't it? Like, no one thinks about that. Once care finishes, because it's 18, isn't it? They go,
18.
Right, you're 18, and then do you know, because I mean, yours is a different experience, but do they prepare them? I suppose they don't just boot them out, do they? They're supposed to have...
Yeah, you'd like to think a lot of them will go to uni.
Like you said, but if they don't, then there's no...
And think about over holidays. when everybody goes home to their families and stuff, a lot of these kids don't have anybody. It's really, really sad. Mm. And I think people need to be aware that there's a lot of kids that do struggle, well, young adults that do struggle just coming straight out of the system without a proper support network, because you get given money by the council and they'll help you find council housing and stuff, but that fits in that a similar support network. I think a stable job is what they really need to go to uni. But it's a work in progress, eh?
Yeah, no, you're right. I find it it really saddens me that, and it's not their fault. Like I say, human, I think this is what we need to get our heads around, is the fact that, and I've said this loads of times, us human beings, we're animals, really. And sometimes, you know, we do things that, like a lot of people, like they do things that, you know, that mean that they have their kids taken off of them, and it's not the kids' fault.
No.
Do you know what I mean? I don't know what the answer is. I wish I did. If I had my way, I'd gather them all up.
Yeah.
Put them in. I don't know, but you can't do that, obviously. But it's yeah, these are the things that keep me awake at night.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing. Kids struggle for their parents' mistakes a lot of the time.
Mm.
And it's really hard and quite brutal to know that this goes on a daily basis. Just kids fall into the system.
Oh, man, when you hear, because you think you've heard it all. You think you've heard, like, the most horrific thing that you could hear. And then you hear, we've just found these women. They're in this basement for 10 years and they were locked in by the dad. And then the dad was having sex with them. And you're like, oh, my God, how was that going on and no one noticed? You know, it's this is what I mean about human beings. We're fucking weird. We do some fucked up shit.
Yeah,
you know, and this is, you know, and that's why we have trouble. Because we're fighting these subconscious, animalistic things going on all the time, aren't we? That you know, and some of us are able to get a handle on it and go, no, we don't. Like I've said this before, like when someone hands you a baby, and you get this immediate thought that goes, you should boot that over the shed, and you go, I don't, what? No, hang on a minute. And the other part of your brain goes, no, don't do that. That's not what we do. We look after these, we nurture them, and we care about them. And then the animal brain's going, yeah, eat it. You know, I don't want to eat it. I'm going to look after it. It's mad, isn't it? The brain and us.
There's a very interesting book that I started reading and then stopped because sometimes I fail to keep myself motivated to do stuff, but the beginning of it was really, really good and speaks of what you were just talking to. It's called The Chimp Paradox, and it talks about the three different parts of your brains where you've got that animalistic urge and the bit that's telling you to be sensible, and then you've got the computer brain where everything's stored. It's really, really interesting. I think you'd like it.
Yeah. What's it called?
The Chimp Paradox.
Oh, yeah, I'll check that out. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Although I did.
Very good.
Oh, yeah, I love stuff like that. I love...
I'm
or was it just the foreword?
No, I just read the title.
of the book. Oh, yeah. The summary.
I just Googled good brain books. The first one that popped up, I was like, this one.
I love reading. But if I... And I tried to read Brief History of Time. And, oh, man, I didn't get past chapter 3. And they was talking about the difference between an everyday theory and a scientific theory, and I still don't fucking know what he was going on about. Again, I was like, fuck it, because I thought I understood what a theory was, but no, when it comes to science, it means something completely different. And oh God, so I do, yeah, I know what you mean. I get. Some of these books, I get into them, and then I'm like, I don't understand this bit. I've Googled it 6 times. I don't know what they're talking about. I'll go back to my comics.
I find if you get on a roll with a book, if you really sink into it at the beginning, and then you're like, oh, this is awesome, and then you're just in it for the entire time. But if I get out of routine and say I don't read it 1 or 2 days, I'm like, oh, and I really struggle. And what I started watching Criminal Minds and on Amazon Prime, because what else are you going to do when you're locked in a house? And there's 14 seasons of it, and I think in the past week I've done like 3.
Yeah, right.
And before I go to bed, I'm just like, oh, just watch an episode of Criminal Minds. Then I'll be reading. But now I'm just so stuck into it. I'm just like, nah, I'll just watch another one.
I think,
it's fine.
I, like I say, I love to read, but I find it because the phone's right there. The internet is right there. And there's all
portal this... into another world.
Yeah, exactly. And you go, I fancy a bit of a dopamine here. Oh, I'll just put a picture up on Instagram, get me a few likes and get those synapses popping. Really?
I just want to be happy.
Yeah.
Please.
But what you should do, there is something to be said for coming away from the screens and trying to find a book that you're into and just burying yourself in it. I'm getting more into it and I am enjoying it. And I think that finding things that you enjoy, like you say, like cooking. Jade's the same. She's not into like cooking everyday dinner, but she'll go, all right, I'm gonna make strawberry cheesecake ice cream from scratch. Here we go. And you're like, all right, but when and as she's you need what? You need capers.
And lemon for tonight's dinner.
Well, get off your ass and go and get it.
What's she making?
She's making sea bass tonight. And this is the thing. Where we live is down. The shops are up the hill. And this Jade talks about it in Serious Black Jumper. It's like she's all day, every day. She's feminism, right? Banging on. Every time we watch a film, she's like, this is problematic. We watched Once Upon a Time in Hollywood recently, and she just sat there, just slagging it off all the way through. Wow, they've given Margot Robbie nothing to do. This is ridiculous. Why is she even in this? Why is it all men? The patriarchy. And then she'll turn around and go, babe, can you go out these shops, please? I need a lemon and some capers. I'm like, get off your ass and go and get it yourself, feminist. But no, that's where feminism stops, John.
Yep. It's not on and off switch.
Yeah.
It depends on when they're hungry, I think.
Yeah, pick and choose the bits you like. It's all bollocks. It's such bollocks. I'm more of a feminist than she is. So there we go. Yeah, so we're having sea bass tonight. But that's it. That sounds so posh, doesn't it? Like, we're having sea bass this evening. We don't always have sea bass.
Sorry.
We had beans on toast the other day.
Yeah, we fucking
know. I did anyway. You didn't want it.
No. Nothing wrong with beans on toast.
I love beans on toast. Do you put cheese on it?
Even... I'm just like the classic, just beans and toast, staple. Right, but where I used to cook all the time, I'd still the old classics like that. I still absolutely love. We call it in my house brown food, where it all just looks brown. You know, where you just get something out of the oven. You're having a bit of brown tonight. Yeah, a little bit of brown. No worries. I've just got to put this in 10 minutes before I put the other lot in. And it all be done at the exact same time. This is amazing.
Brown food. I love that. Or war food. Have a bit of war food.
Straight out of the tin.
Bit of spam, bit of corned beef.
I can never eat spam ever again. I was at festival one year and there was this guy just came with us, never met him before. And he just opened a can of spam, took the top bit off the can and started using that as a spoon.
No.
It was honestly one of the grossest things I'd ever seen. And the morning after a night at a festival, you're not usually in the best state anyway. And I was just watching that. I was like,
no.
It was so weird.
Who takes spam to a festival?
It was so surreal.
Jade, this is the thing, right? She bangs on about going to all these Michelin-starred restaurants and going to we went to Paris and we did this thing and it was amazing and the food came out on 3 teaspoons and all this shit, right? But you give her a tin of spam, it's like Christmas. Her eyes get all big. She hugs it. She's like, it's like Ren and Stimpy when they're happy. Like,
I think it links back to memories though, doesn't it? That old thing you have when you're a kid and there's some happy times where nothing matters at all and you just think of that and you're like, it takes you back. I mean, I don't think spam will take me anywhere but to the toilet.
You're right. I really love eating in nice places. We're very fortunate that we've been able to do that, and we're both able to cook. We can all cook, which is really nice. But just sometimes, just soup and a sandwich. Soup and a sandwich, easy. Chicken soup, cheese and ham sandwich. Robert's your father's brother. Done. Love it.
You just can't go go wrong with it, can you?
Just, no, I love it, mate. About. I love it. This is what people need to do. Now, because someone said to me the other day that this podcast, like the jumping off point is mental health. And then someone said the other day, go, yeah, but you don't really talk about mental health. We go, yeah, we are. There's no point in talking about actual mental health. What we're doing is telling our stories and telling people what we do to try and get out of the shit when we feel terrible. And from that, people go, oh yeah, I feel like that. And that's how we talk about mental health on here. It's not,
it's non-intrusive, yeah. Isn't it? You're not just blasting people with be positive. It's a lot more, I feel, constructive, where you're letting people know that the shit that they're going through is kind of the same shit that you're going through.
Exactly.
You're not in it alone, which is way more important than just saying, everybody feels sad, feel happy.
Yeah. All these fucking memes. Just kick your shoes off and walk across the sand. And like, who's got sand? Who's got sand near them? Just do something that makes you happy.
There is no sand in Peckham.
No sand.
No. Oh, I might find a sand pit, but going back to your point about the moustache and kids' parks, I'm going to give
you don't want to be. Yeah,
no, I don't want to be. I don't want to be in that environment.
You look like you're trying to blend in.
I see you hiding in the bushes.
Oh, God, this is not how we're ending this podcast. We're not talking about this.
No.
But this is again, I said it earlier, why I wanted to have you on and talk to you, because I wanted people to hear your story, and I want people to hear that there are happy endings out there. It doesn't have to be the end just because, you know, these horrific things have happened. And I know a couple of people like that their childhood has been horrific, but they've managed to, you know, carve out a decent life for themselves. Yeah. And it's a testament to you, mate. You say like you had the family and things like that, but you haven't let it get to you. You don't walk around going, oh, this really horrible thing happened to me, you should feel sorry for me. You're one of the best people I've ever met. And
thank you, Rich. I appreciate
I'm proud to call you family. And that's why I wanted to have you on. I think you're brilliant. Yeah. So
well, thank you for giving the opportunity just to tell my story. And just, your childhood doesn't define you.
No, not at all. Are you on where when people listen to this, they might want to reach out to you and say hello. Where can we find you, John?
It's just John Jennings_ on Instagram. And if you want to see food that I cook, it's on there as well, because that way you know we're not lying. I can cook something. It's not all fabricated.
I will say now, you are a very, very good cook. And so we're gonna come up and see you again, because I was really impressed with your house.
Thank you very much. We'll have we can't go do any stand-up gigs, so you can come do us a personal one.
Yeah. Oh, I don't know. Well, after the last time that you were at a gig, that's the worst thing I've ever said out loud. I will say this to the people listening. So earlier in the year, I was doing some gigs in the French Alps, and very lucky to be able to do so with the wonderful people at Taking the Piste. Wonderful people. If you get the chance to go out there and have a look, if you see Taking the Piste, they're really lovely people. Els and Richard and everybody, they're lovely folks. And you happened to be out there as well, didn't you?
It was so funny. I think I saw you do an Instagram post.
Yeah.
Or you replied to one of mine, and it was just like, shit, you're around the corner.
That's it, yeah. And I was taking a photo pretending I was skiing, but really I was sat at the pub just getting pissed. So you're at the gig that night, and then and there was eight of you taking up the front row, and we were having a bit of banter, and it was all mucking around, and then we were talking about, I was talking about parents, and I'm like, oh, you know, parents, they, you know, nowadays they give a shit about their kids and they go on play dates. And not yours, obviously, John, but everyone else's. And it was, and as I said it, my brain went, yeah, say that, it's really funny. And then I said it and my brain went, ha, dickhead, that's awful. And I was like, I was so upset that I'd said it.
It was so funny though, because the whole room was silent apart from the front row of my friends who knows the situation.
Oh, yeah.
They know. So it wasn't that he wasn't being funny. I thought it was hilarious. But in the room was just like, what the fuck is he talking about?
But I'd explained it as well. I think people were just, what is this? Is it? Oh, yeah, I know.
Is this interactive comedy?
It's just, it was like, yeah, they were watching out. They were like, it was like they were watching us like sitting around a dinner at Christmas. Just like, yeah, it wasn't a gig. It was just us just doing a live Facebook update. It was like, yeah. I don't know. Yeah. But yeah, I don't know where I'm going with this now. But yeah,
it was hilarious.
You took that well, John. So well done. Listen, John. John, mate,
this has
been lovely. Thank you so much for coming on.
You're more than welcome. Thank you.
Produced by Paul Daniels at pauldaniels.tv.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Made by darkhorsedigital.co.uk. Shooting, live streaming, and podcast production.